Coming up, we're going to look at five pitfalls for those of you that are creatives doing creative work. And then new data out, less than half employees say their workplace actually is making their lives better. We'll break that down as well. All right, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where our entire goal is to help you grow personally so that you can advance professionally and then lead effectively. All right, let's talk creatives. I'm a creative, so this is going to be freeing, I hope, for a lot of you. If you know a creative, this is the show that you forward to them because we're looking at self-awareness today. That's always a theme of this show, to be self-aware. To be self-aware is to have the foundational reality to be able to build from. In other words, to grow personally and advance professionally. And lead effectively, by the way. One of the great reasons why leaders aren't effective is because they aren't clear and they aren't aware. So we're going to get aware today. We're going to dive into pitfalls that creatives can fall into. Without the right boundaries, here's what you need to know, creatives. Your work can be mentally and physically dangerous. Mentally and physically dangerous. I would know. Because as I said, I'm a creative. And the work that I'm passionate about is creating content in the form of books, a show, speeches, products. It's all about creating, making, and performing. That is my work world. It is a constant combination of the two. And so if you're anything like me, then you love the creative aspects of your job. But anytime you're passionate about something, know this, you're always on the edge. There's a risk of getting out of balance. The tortured artist trope exists for a reason, folks. Creative work is, by definition, passionate work. And passion comes from the Latin word patior, which means to suffer. In other words, if I take this into a relational context, I would be willing to suffer for my wife, for my kids, for my family. And so the idea here is that when you love a type of work, a role, so much that you're willing to suffer through failure, waiting, rejection, then you know that there's real passion there. So the intensity here of the emotion also means, and we need to be aware, that we can easily cross that line from healthy, if the microphone here, for those of you just listening, if the microphone is right at my chin and my left hand and my right hand are on either side of the microphone, I'm healthy on the left-hand side, but I can very easily cross over that midline, the microphone, over here on the right-hand side of being unhealthy. It happens very quickly. Why? Because you care so freaking much. And we've all probably used the phrase, I care too much. It's when we get unhealthy. So what's the solution? What are the warning signs that your creative work is taking you to an unhealthy place? I think there's five common pitfalls that we could just step into if we're not aware of them. And I've experienced these and I've seen these pitfalls with the amount of people that I've coached. All right, so number one. Pitfall number one for creatives. Here we go. If you want to pause this stuff, take notes, make a memo here, an audio memo. This is important. Pitfall number one for creatives. Not seeing the project to its completion. Oh my gosh, I might as well be talking to me, Alex. I might as well be staring at me in the mirror right now. This was every report card comment of my entire life. Ken is a great starter. He's excited. He's enthusiastic, but he tends to lose focus. Uh-oh. So it's a way of giving up. Because you get distracted to the point you go, I think this shiny thing over here is more exciting right now. Two, pitfall number two, always looking for a new thing to create. We were just hot and bothered over this thing yesterday. Now I'm hot and bothered over a new thing. Always looking for the next new shiny object. Boy, oh boy, this is huge. This is where disciplined vision comes into play real quick. I'm just going to unpack this just for a moment. We'll move on to number three in a second. But as a guy who struggles with this, the next new idea, I mean, I can come out of one meeting and be jacked about an idea, go into another meeting and be more jacked about the new idea. And at that point, I've got to be able to sit still long enough to go, okay, there's two ideas I'm pretty jacked about. All right, now, where am I going in the big picture? What's my vision for the future? Okay, so where do these two ideas fit in relation to seeing the vision become a reality? Which idea advances the vision or advances toward the vision, or which idea is any one of the ideas a distraction from reaching the vision? This is important to be disciplined and go, okay, I love this freaking idea. And you get to the point where you go, it's a really good idea, but it's not the right timing. Or it's a really good idea, but it's not for me, it's for somebody else. And boy, oh boy, that's hard. All right, we'll keep going. Number three pitfall, being too focused on perfectionism that you never finish. Now, I don't struggle with this. So the first two were like Ken talking to himself in the mirror. I'm not a perfectionist. I'm a ready, fire, and then aim guy. Now, but some of you are going, oh boy, I care so deeply, and I tend to lean towards perfectionism to the point that I will keep tinkering, keep trying, keep drafting, keep rebuilding, and I never actually release this creative thing that I want to share with the world. It becomes paralyzing. And that's fear. Know this, that's okay. But know that what's driving perfectionism is a fear of criticism. Woo! I could stop the show right now. That was good. It's probably all I got left right now. I'll finish, Alex. Don't get nervous. But I could stop the show there because I've counseled and coached so many people who struggle with perfectionism. Let me tell you something. At its core, perfectionism, we try to tell ourselves, no, I'm committed to doing the best. That's a cop-out. Let me tell you what's going on. Perfectionism is a fear of criticism. And let me set you free, if I can, creatives, on that. If you're a creative who struggles with perfectionism, hear me say this. Your thing that you created is not for everybody. So that'll just set you free. There's some people who will love it because they're wired the way you're wired. They like the things you like. Your birds of a feather flock together. But there are a lot of people not going to like it. I could literally give a speech at an event and watch the reviews come in and read the reviews, and somebody could go, this was absolutely phenomenal. And another person go, I don't even know why the guy was up on the stage. That's worth a swig of coffee. You need to sit there and think about that. Your creative endeavor is not for everybody. So get over the criticism, because let's just say that you could create a perfect thing, whatever it is. Even if it was perfect, some moron out there would point out something wrong with it, right? So let's set ourselves free. Can we move on that one? Great. Number four pitfall, letting your performance determine your value. This is insecurity. Let me tell you something. This is me back in the mirror again, probably the big one for me, because I'm such an Enneagram 3 and it's all about the performance. Performance, performance, performance. So if I'm not careful, I can look at comments in a YouTube clip or on a podcast review or the speech feedback from the audience. And while feedback is great and you need to do it, sometimes I will let something either that I felt like, you know, that wasn't my best, and I'll be down. And so I get this. And that's my illustration. Number five. For creatives, number five is forgetting to rest long enough to recharge. Forgetting to rest long enough to recharge. This is huge for creatives because here's what happens. We get addicted to the creative process. And we create the thing, and then that inspires us to create the next thing. And if you're not careful, one of the big pitfalls is you just are always creating and you aren't resting. And so this is where I love the word recreation. It comes from the root word of creation, right? And it's recreation. And the idea of recreation, recreation, is to play, right? We think of recreation as a play word or a entertainment word or a resting word, and it is. And so the idea of getting away from the thing you're creating, or all the things you're creating, long enough to recreate yourself, this is huge. So why did I go through these pitfalls for you, creatives? Because I want you to be healthy. You cannot give what you do not have. And if you aren't recreating yourself, if you aren't aware of the creative pitfalls that you could walk into, then it will inhibit, it will prohibit the very thing that you were designed to do, which is to create. So be aware of these passion pitfalls. These are in the assessment, the Get Clear Career Assessment. And if you've taken it, go back and look at your result pages, your top three passions, and just look below the results, the description, the summary, and you'll see the passion pitfalls. And revisit these things to be aware in your own life of how you could potentially burn out, all because you haven't recreated yourself and you've stepped into some of these pitfalls. I hope that helps you, creatives. We need you. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, can I ask you to do me a favor? If you're enjoying the show, if it is helping you in any way, would you help us by just giving us some love? And you do that via podcast, if you're a listener over there, with a follow and a great review, a five-star review, and share it as well. And then if you're watching via YouTube, just a thumbs up on the video and subscribe to our channel and share as well. I would be grateful for that. All right. I told you folks that the readers are coming in, and I decided to bite the bullet, so I know people that are on YouTube love to comment. So, they're gonna zoom in. Yeah, comment away. I don't care. I actually like these. I'll give them a shout out. I got these in New York City when I was up there doing media recently. These are Caddies, CADDIS, and this is kind of fun. I don't know if you can see this. Let's have some fun with this. Can you zoom in on this? Zoom in a little bit more. You see the words? Isn't that kind of funny? Look at that. Now, can you see it? Uh-oh, it's too... See, it says regular here. Goofy and regular. And I don't know why it says that.
Skateboarding.
But it does. What do you think, Alex?
Skateboarding. Oh, that's a skateboarding reference.
It's a skateboarding reference?
Yeah, goofy and regular. It's how your footing is.
How fun is that? Because I remember looking at them in the airport going, I like the way these look. And I'm an Enneagram 3, so I care a lot about the way I look. And I didn't understand that. So that's cool, Alex. Thank you. He's my producer and skateboard enthusiast. Okay. Let's get serious, shall we? So Deloitte launched their 2024 Global Human Capital Trends Report. And so the reason I share things like this is because I want you to know what people are saying in the world of work. Because if you're saying it, I don't want you to feel ostracized. I want you to feel like, hey, I'm seen here. So here we go. The report was looking at trends on business and human outcomes and organizational success. So you get all that fancy stuff. But human sustainability is the big thing we're going to lock in on. And let me tell you what that means, okay, as it relates to this this study. This is all about greater well-being for people at work, right? Just, are you well at work? And so this is interesting stuff. Here we go. By the way, I'm getting used to this, Alex, because while I can see my article fabulously now, as I look at myself, I'm blurry, and I think it's more important that I see the article. But here we go. 89% of executives say their organization is advancing human sustainability. In other words, they are making life better for workers in some capacity. Now, here's where the divide is. Now, watch this, folks. 89% of executives say, hey, we're doing a good job of making the workplace better. Okay. 41% of workers in the study said that's happening. Oof. And then 43% of workers in the study said their company has made them better off than when they started. So in other words, they started at the company sometime in the past, and as a result of working at this company, their life is better off. Now, we got to park here for a second. I mean, this is unbelievable, folks. And I have touched on data like this previously, but it was from a different study. This is fresh. This is a Krispy Kreme hot now sign. This data is as fresh as the Krispy Kreme's rolling off the bin, okay? So we still have this gap. Why do we have the gap? And the answer is really simple. We have a leadership listening deficit. It's that simple. Leaders aren't listening. Why? Why aren't they listening? I'll tell you why. Because they are treating the idea of creating a culture and an environment where my people are thriving as people. In other words, yes, they're winning professionally, but they're also winning personally. We have a healthy culture, therefore we have a healthy team environment, and oh, we have healthy people. But leaders aren't looking at this. When you see data that says 89% of executives say their organization is doing things, creating policies, in other words, creating a culture where their people are thriving, and then only 41% say that's true, we have a listening problem. And the listening problem is actually even simpler than that. It's not that the executives and leaders aren't listening to their team. They're not even talking to them. Because I'm not willing to be so cynical today that I think that if leaders were actually talking to their people and listening to their people, that they would just completely ignore them. Maybe I'm Pollyanna positive. Maybe I'm just not jaded enough. I don't know. I know there's gonna be a lot of comments on this. I'll tell you that much. That little assertion right there, I'll be, oh, Ken, they don't care about us. Okay. I'm not willing to go there yet. So here's what I think it is. I'm gonna say that I believe that leaders just do window dressing and they go, okay, let's put some stuff out there. Let's put more snacks in the room. Let's do some calm rooms. Let's, all the things. And they're not actually sitting with their people going, hey, what's your stress level? What's the source of your stress? How can I help you win in your role? Because here's the key thing, leaders. People don't want a better job. They want a better life. The job is a part of them having a better life. You want people to stay with you. You want people to perform to their optimal level. As the leader, understand that comes with the territory that when you accepted the leadership position, you accepted the responsibility to do your best to help the people you lead win at work so that they have a better life. If you don't like that, that's your prerogative. Get out of leadership. 53% of respondents agree their organization is in the early phases of identifying better ways to measure worker performance and value. Okay, that's trending up. That's good. Because I do think what we call working performance or how you are measured on your work, I think that is going to go under a major change in the world of work in the next couple years. I think the way that companies, how they monitor or measure your productivity, I think that's going through a change. And I think AI is going to be a big part of that. Okay. Now, here's two other quick things. Today's workers want freedom to build microcultures tailored to each team's needs. I thought this was fabulous information, and I would say that I think this is actually good. I think this is real rank and file people going, hey, they're telling these survey folks, they're going, hey, I think that our team should be able to build a very custom subculture within the greater culture. And I think that's good. Now, the key here is it's got to be led well. But I do think that one team over here in technology should have its own culture. Does it fit? Does it thrive within the greater culture? Yes, but it absolutely should. And the way I look at it is you think of New York City has five boroughs. I think every company would have neighborhoods. Are we all together and unified? Yes. But do we operate differently? Yes, in some ways. I think that's huge. And then 71% of respondents said that focusing on individual teams as the best places to cultivate culture, fluidity, agility, and diversity is really important. I think that's true. I think the great leaders of the future, the great companies of the future, will be defined by two things that we've talked about in this article and in this study. The first is leaders who begin to understand that when people are working for them, they aren't looking for you to make their job better. Now, they won't articulate this way, but what they really want is they want a better life. They want an opportunity to grow. They want an opportunity to earn. They want an opportunity to be autonomous in that this is what your role is. I'm going to stay out of your way and give you the resources you need and let you do your thing. This is what people want. And it's about their pursuit of happiness. Okay? That's the first thing, leaders. The second thing that will define great leaders is this team culture. Is understanding that, and we'll use a football team as an analogy here, is understanding that I've got the offensive team, I got my defensive team, and I got special teams. All 53 players, same team, same logo, same head coach, but there's an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, a special teams coordinator. All of those three teams and those three leaders have different objectives to accomplish, to meet the overall goal, win the Super Bowl. Okay? This is all simple stuff. None of this is complex. But understand that when you begin to understand that as a leader and go, hey, we're going to thrive and we're going to have these different subcultures all driving towards the one culture initiative. That's going to be the game changer. So good stuff there. Be aware of that. And if you're not in a culture like this and a company like this, start searching for one because they're out there. Have hope. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. It's good coffee. I don't know why I haven't been drinking coffee the entire time I've been doing the show. It stops today. Or should I say it starts? You know? What am I doing? I love a good cup of coffee. And Nathan said something to me. He was having some fun before the show about different types of coffee. And it occurs to me that I think I might start trying different types of coffee. I had Dominican coffee. It was in the Dominican for spring break. And Dominican coffee is fabulous, very, very different than the way we drink it in the U.S., which bottom line is I was hanging out with a Dominican businessman who I've made a connection with. Great time. He and his wife and Stacy, we all went to dinner and we had coffee, Alex, post dinner. And I was like, look, I don't drink coffee after lunch. Well, they said, you got to try this. So put a little liqueur in it. And just drank it the way they drink it. It's fantastic. So there you go. And basically what he told me was, he goes, he's a very nice man. He goes, the stuff you guys drink at Starbucks, that's not coffee. And the Dominicans make good coffee. It's one of their exports. So anyway, my buddy George Camel likes to drink fancy coffee. So I think I'm going to lean on George a little bit to help me out. All right, let's go to Emma, who's going to join us for a coaching session in Minneapolis. Emma in Minneapolis, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to have a sip of coffee while we coach. How's that? Is that good?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
All right. What's up? Tell me. I'm excited to help out.
Thank you. I'm excited as well. So I've been in corporate accounting for about 3.5 to 4 years. And my question for you is, I feel drained in my current role, and I just am looking for a little bit of help finding about how to find something I'm passionate about.
Okay, good.
So, you know, some parts of my job are interesting. Some I find pretty boring. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if I'm just maybe burnt out from the extra stuff outside of work or if it's the job itself.
Well, let's look at everything. So the first thing you understand is that the boring stuff is draining you. There's no question about that. So what would you call the interesting stuff? Let's do a quick list here. Do a quick inventory. The stuff you're doing now, the work you're doing now, what's interesting to you?
I would say the interesting stuff are what I would define as like custom projects. So making reports for people, researching, you know, into the nitty gritty areas that maybe somebody hasn't had a chance to look into yet. Mm-hmm. Finding different efficiencies in our business.
Good.
Things like that.
Boy, we're seeing a pattern right there, aren't we? My goodness, that couldn't be more obvious. I mean, it's like the analyzing, the executing, the researching. Boy, that's just an alarm going off here. So I think I have a pretty good idea what's next. Tell me the work that's really boring and draining.
The really boring and draining work I would call like the paper pushing thing. So paying the bills is the big one, like scanning and filing paperwork, things like that.
That's administrative stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, that's too process for you. It's just too, it's not even process because you like the process on the other stuff. It's just, you're not interested in a task list. A task list doesn't make you excited. It drains you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You want to dig. You want to analyze. Yeah. I love it. Okay, good. So, you can share as much as you want to share here, but you said a moment ago, I don't know if it's the stuff outside of work that's burning me out. So what can you tell me? What's going on outside?
I think the biggest thing is my husband and I recently, within the last couple months, started the Ramsey Baby Steps, which have led to a lot of difficult conversations and difficult choices that we've made.
Yeah.
We know they're all, of course, for the better and going to improve things for the future. They're still just things we have to now act upon, which is, you know, just difficult. So that's the biggest thing. And then just some like family health stuff that I'm helping take care of. And
I've heard the same word three times. You know what the word is that you just shared? You said it three times. Difficult.
Yeah.
You said the word difficult three times. And so I want to encourage you, Emma. You're not burned out. You're just going through hard stuff right now. Getting on a budget, cutting expenses, having yucky money conversations around making hard choices. It just is difficult right now. So emotionally, it's kind of yuck, right?
Yeah.
And so what's going on is, there is a, well, let me ask a question and tie it all in. How much of the job, back to the job right now, how much of the job is the exciting stuff or interesting stuff versus how much is the boring stuff? Can you give me a percentage?
Yeah, I would say probably 30 to 35% is the exciting stuff.
Ooh, that's not fun.
Yeah. No.
So let's round it down just to prove a point. That means 70% of your day is boring, awful, bleh, stuff. And then you're going home and trying to make it through the baby steps, and that's really hard too.
Yeah.
So a huge portion of your day is yuck and suck, right?
Yeah.
Now we know what's going on, don't we, Emma?
Yeah.
All right. Now, back to the root of your question. Yeah, we need to get out of this current job at some point, but because we're in the baby steps, because we need every penny coming in, we're going to be patient and we're going to change our mindset about this current day job. That's kind of yuck and suck. And we're going to go, you know what? I'm grateful for it because it's keeping me stable right now. And so that's the mindset switch. This is not long-term. I'm not stuck in yuck and suck, right? That's our new anthem. You're not stuck here. You're here until we find an exit. Make sense?
Okay.
All right. Now, here's what's great. If you're going, okay, Ken, I understand that, but what am I doing next? You already told me. Let's see if you can figure it out, Emma. What kind of job are you looking for next?
Something analytical.
Yes. You made the list. I wrote it down. Let me see if I can read. I gotta get my glasses on, Emma. Custom reports. Researching. Finding efficiencies. That's what you are looking for. And we're going to flip the percentage here. So instead of doing that 30% of the day, we're going to do it how much of the day? 70%.
I mean, ideally 100.
I want to caution that for a second. Because the team asked me this a long time ago when we came up with the assessment. I think you can be in a dream job and be spending 75% of your day doing the stuff that you are really good at, that you love and that you care about. And the other 25% is just being an adult. Like, I have to go to meetings a lot here, and I hate meetings with a deep, abiding passion. I like quick conversations, brainstorm, let's go. These hour-long meetings suck the life out of me. Mm-hmm. All right, but guess what? I got to be an adult. So I want us to flip it. So we're looking for a job that is, you know, hey, I'm analyzing things, I'm researching, and I am coming up with solves and solutions to make things be more efficient. Boy, that's a great day for you, isn't it, Emma?
Yeah.
And so we're looking for a job that allows me to do that 3/4 of the day is the rule of thumb. And that's what we go after. And by the way, you've got the skill set and you've got the experience, don't you?
Yeah.
All right, Emma. Did we leave anything on the table? Did we get it all?
The only other glaring thing that sticks out to me is I also have this pull to want to help people. And that's another thing that I don't feel like I'm really doing in my job.
All right. Tell me who the people are. Describe them.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'd love to help all kinds of different people, but...
No, if you could only help one people group the rest of your life, who is that people group? Come on. Uh-oh. Now, that's always a good sign. When we get a caller to go, now we're getting somewhere. Come on, just say it. Don't try to wordsmith it. Your brain's already put it up on the board. Say it. Who are the people that you would most want to help? If you could only help... this type of person and only this type of person the rest of your life, who is it? Say it.
Young couples with kids.
Young couples with kids. All right, here's some good news. You can start helping young couples with kids tomorrow. You got to go find them. Where are they? Are they at church? Are they in daycare? Where are they? Who says you have to get a paycheck doing it either? What if you just helped one couple, right? And all of a sudden, what's that going to do to your heart, Emma?
Make it happy.
It's going to make your heart happy. So let's start helping couples with kids this week, this month. You got it?
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate you, Emma. You got a great heart. Thanks for allowing me to coach you. Folks, that's why we do what we do. We want her to grow personally, advance professionally, so that she is doing meaningful work.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.